Welcome back. It's Friday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM. You might remember Joe Broadhurst from last week. Joe, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And Joe's got an interview for us, so I'll let him introduce that.
Good morning, Montreal. We are joined today, this morning, by Constance Fogel from the Canadian Action Party. Good morning, Ms. Fogel.
Hello, good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm good.
We woke you up at 4:30. Are you going to be able to...
Oh, yeah.
Have you had coffee and you're ready to go?
Yeah.
So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background. You are a former educator as well as a practicing lawyer, and you represent now the Canadian Action Party. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about the Canadian Action Party?
Yeah. Well, I am the leader, have been since March of 2004. I've... A lot of legal political work I've been doing since 1997 has to do with the globalization issue and the increasing attacks on our the constitutional rights and entitlements of citizens in Canada that have been eroded. First of all, we were looking. I was with a group called the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee, and that was a spokesperson. Director of that group, and we were looking at a lot of the actions there that were threatening the rights of citizens by way of international agreements that mostly had to do with, well, call themselves trade agreements, but they're not really about trade. They're always about investments and about the power of corporations. And of course, over time, now we're getting more and more into the civil liberties, militarization process, loss of liberties in Canada that's flowing from the demands from the United States. And a lot of us became very involved politically with the Canadian Action Party after 1997 election and decided that this is something that we needed to be dealing with at a political level. It's good to be a non-governmental organization, and all those activities are very important for information dissemination. But a number of people were very concerned that a lot of these rights were not being addressed by the other political parties, and so the Canadian Action Party came into existence in 1997.
Okay,
that's where I am now. But yes, I was a teacher, and I am a lawyer.
So tell us about, why don't you introduce a little bit everybody to this eavesdropping legislation that is being proposed, and it's being proposed this fall, correct?
Right. Well, I don't know the guts of it yet. I just have some of the generalities. She speaks to the government telling us they're wanting to introduce in the fall give powers to security agencies and to the police for them to eavesdrop on cell phone calls and to monitor the internet activities of Canadians. That again is just another one of the liberty stripping activities that have been in process dramatically since the 9/11 event in the United States. All the kinds of powers that they have already introduced in the United States, we are doing incrementally in Canada as a result of arrangements and agreements that our political leaders make with the United States. They make them in backroom deals, they make them in side agreements, and then some of them get passed actually in our parliament. The actual details we'll get in a few more months, but just for them to be flying the information that this is a process they're going to be looking at, along with no-fly lists, something else that they're going to be introducing, and some more information on that.
Is that going to be bungled with the same legislation, or is that going to be...
No, it'll be separate legislation, but incrementally they're, at our government level, introducing all the kinds of things that the United States has already introduced in their country. And it looks like it's no longer a case where we do anything according to what we wanted, what's good for the interests of Canadians, that our government is just going lockstep with what the United States is demanding. I mean, we have so many U.S. Policing kinds of agencies already functioning in Canada, with offices located in Canada. Everything is always given to us as though it's a need we have for anti-terrorism. It isn't that at all. The whole terrorism thing, the anti-terrorism thing, is just it's a mechanism. It's an excuse. It's a red herring to justify the elimination of the rights and privileges that are legal rights that have been fought. It's taken centuries for citizens to obtain.
And everything's being eroded, right?
I'm sorry?
Everything is being eroded slowly.
It's not just even being eroded, being eliminated. I mean, from the introduction of Canada and Bill C-36 of our own anti-terrorist law through to a bill that was, I think, ratified just a year ago that gives dictatorial powers to about 7 cabinet ministers so they can just shut down the country at their whim without having to go to Parliament.
This is a special counsel, right?
Pardon me?
That's a special counsel that they set up?
Well, it's just each. I don't know that they call it a special counsel. It's just that each of the ministers have there are about 5 ministries that can make a decision that for national security purposes, they don't have to go to Parliament to basically create a state of war situation in Canada. Movement of people, imposition of health demands. It really is a police state situation. And what I don't like, what causes me sleeplessness is the fact that this is all happening with so little discussion, and it's all happening with the complicity of almost every parliamentarian. They're not looking at this for what it really is.
Or perhaps they're looking at it, but maybe they received support from some of the companies that are going to benefit from this legislation, no?
Well, there has to be that, of course. You know, the whole process of it's horrible to have to be looking at what's happening constantly in the United States and be worrying ourselves here in Canada with what's happening there, because we now know that what happens there comes here. And it's true. I mean, a major process there, the majority of the money in the United States is now going into the militarization process, the weapons industry. You look at just a horrible disaster in Louisiana, and that country, with all its technology and its great military arrangements, they failed to really meet the needs of those people in their own country, and now they've got millions of homeless people. It boggles your mind where
It was 4 days after, I believe, yesterday. It was 4 days after, and they were unable to even drop water.
It's insanity. That in itself is an example of how all this homeland security stuff has nothing to do whatsoever for meeting any of the needs of the people. It's awful what's happening there. It's ghastly that we're going lockstep here. It's frightening to me The fascist regime of Hitler is not that long ago. It's just decades ago. And all of the things that are happening here, you can see the parallels that happened in the rise of the Third Reich. And people have got to be looking at that straight on and facing it and just saying, my God, this can't happen here. All the good people in Germany that turned a blind eye for so long until it was too late to talk and to speak back.
It's almost as if people could never imagine that type of state that could exist right now. We're in 2005. But,
That's right.
And it's very hard to convince people that...
It is because, for one thing, they're being bombarded daily in the mainstream media with a different explanation of what everything is all about. And this whole business of surveillance of the internet is very, very significant, because the internet has been the mechanism of media information to the masses of people around the world that was giving different information about what was really going on. In other words, giving the real truth, really getting accurate information, accurate criticism coming from that source. And people were able to get information they couldn't get from the mainstream media and begin to make different determinations and judgments about what's going on. That's what's at the bottom of this, of the law here, similar laws in other countries for the surveillance. The purpose is to shut down the internet process, to shut down this very effective mechanism by which masses of people were able to talk to each other, to know that they weren't alone in what they're thinking, and to get information that they couldn't get any, that they can't get elsewhere.
Well, it amazes me because Canada and the U.S., they are always decrying. In China, there's no freedom. For instance, in China, we know that they suppress the internet. We know that there's over the government of China. They employ over 30,000 people to surveil the internet to make sure that people aren't discussing democracy or discussing anything against the state. And yet, here we are with we're looking at this legislation, and it's almost kind of surprising that.
Well, it's shocking, is what it is. It speaks to the doublespeak, you know, to the lies, to the deception of what of what's going on here. It really is an awful, awful state of affairs that is the reality of what we are experiencing in the part of the world that has had some of the best developed forms of liberty. Centuries and centuries it took to develop this, and in just less than a decade, it's all being turned on its head. I'm so glad that you're making this, you're talking about this kind of thing on your program, because it needs to be talked about in the more traditional media. Like there would be some. You're not mainstream in the sense that you're not one of the kinds of media processes that are giving us the misinformation. You're part of the mainstream in that you're not internet that is allowing people to hear some information and to make other determinations. And that's very important that you're doing that. And I'm glad that you've given me the opportunity to be on your program. But your audience is probably a lot of young people, and it's the future.
This is their future.
It's their future, and it's one thing to be getting information. That's very important. First, that's the first step. The second step is to do something with it, not just to wring your hands and then go and stick your head in the ground. People have got to be political. They've got to be active. They've got to be in touch with their political representatives. I don't know what the position of the Bloc Québécois is on this kind of thing. It's interesting. For years I became very active in the time of the various Quebec separatist issues, when we had the worries that the Quebec was going to separate, and all the talk about how Quebec wanted to be distinct and different and all that kind of thing. Now I'm hoping that the way that people think in Quebec is going to be something that they're going to begin. I'm talking about the separatists, all the people that have talked so long about wanting to have their own country, whether they'll be looking at this and saying, gee, how does this affect our movement, and what does it mean for us? And they've got representatives in Canada and through the Bloc Québécois, and surely I'm hoping that that's going to be some kind of a salvation for Canadians, that there'll be some leadership coming from that direction. We're not having a conversation here, and maybe I'm getting into a different level of politics here, but my point to the young people is get out there, get active, become political themselves, become representative, run for parliament.
Because you can do it.
They can do it. And the Canadian Action Party is precisely a vehicle to be there for people to say, look, here's a vehicle that you can become part of. If you want to be, you want to remain Canadian, you want to be independent, you want to be distinct, you want to have a separate voice, you want to make your own future, you want to make your own rules that affect you, that affect us as citizens, all that kind of stuff. It's available, and I'm struggling here as this leader of this party just to keep that vehicle available for people so that it's a route they can go. It's so frustrating to me that we've got Harper complaining that the Liberals aren't moving fast enough to accommodate the United States. I mean, we are being led in this country by anti-Canadians.
Exactly.
It's outrageous.
Well, we're becoming the 51st state, right?
Yep. And worse than that. Worse than that, we won't even be a 51st state. We'll just be a resource that's used, and we won't have a voice. But you know, because we won't, there'll always be this facade that we're a separate country. We'll be like a Gibraltar,
right?
In its relationship with England, we'll be able to make laws about certain local aspects about our sewers, but nothing about the really significant things like defense and international trade and security issues. It's no, it's not good. It's not good at all. And it, I really do hope, I'm inviting the young people who are listening to your program to go to our website, www.canadianactionparty.ca. I'm inviting them to offer themselves as candidates in this country if they're concerned about these issues, because being there means it's a voice, means it's an expression, and it puts pressure on the government because there's somebody that could be elected other than them,
right?
And it holds them back a little bit. Martin has only gone a little slower at the pace that he has because he's a minority government right now. We'd be even further down this road than we are. But my concern about the NDP, it's good that they're there, but they're not speaking out enough on these kinds of things. We're not hearing enough enough leadership on these on these kinds of concerns.
All right, we're going to take a small break. We're going to come back with you, Ms. Vogel.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk a little bit about perhaps who's going to benefit from this legislation.
Right.
And some other things.
Right.
So can you just hold on just a moment?
I sure
we'll be
will.
Back.